welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians and social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Hi, this is Aaron Wilkinson from Asbury University.
Hey, Aaron, this is Rick Hamietzkes.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm very well. Yourself?
I'm doing good. You ready to record this little intro?
I am ready. Actually, let me just start by saying to anyone who's listening to this recording, the actual session starts in about 15 minutes. Aaron and I are just doing some logistical things, so just hang in there for 15 minutes and the recording will start. Just the context, Aaron, typically I don't start at 15 minutes early, and for some people who can't attend the conference, I give them a phone number to call into to listen to the recording, but I don't have a chance to edit that, so I'm just letting those people know when they hear us doing our thing that they do have the right recording. They just have to wait the 15 minutes until the conference actually starts.
Okay.
So at any time you're ready, hit it. We're obviously being recorded, and we'll just edit out, you know, this beginning part that has nothing to do with what you're going to be doing, and then we'll obviously take out the span of time between what you say and when the podcast actually begins, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay, I'm just going to let there be a brief pause. I'll do it, and then I'll pause again.
Appreciate that. You've obviously done editing like this, and the pauses help a lot.
Yes, yes. This podcast has been brought to you by Asbury University's Master of Social Work program, which seeks to integrate Christian faith with social work practice, abiding in Christ, serving others, transforming the world. That should about do it.
Well done, boy. That how long did it take you to write that?
Not too long at all. Not too long.
It was nicely crafted.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Feel free to stay on for the podcast if you or for the audio conference, or if not, we'll run it in a few months. I'll probably get a hold of you ahead of time just to let you listen to it before it actually goes on the air. Not that we'll be able to do anything with it, but just as a courtesy, so you can kind of hear how it's going to turn out.
Sure, I appreciate that.
You bet.
Okay. All right, well, I'll be hearing from you soon. I'm not going to be able to stay for the conference. I got to keep recruiting these students.
Yeah, well, you go get some more.
Okay, thank you so much, Rick.
Take good care, and thanks again for helping us out with this. It'll be interesting to see how this pans out.
Me too.
Great. Right. Take care, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cleveland State University.
Athena Berbrick.
Hello?
Hello, this is Athena Berbrick.
Yeah, this is Rick Hamietzkes.
Hi, Rick. I make sure
I'm David?
This is Athena Berbrick. Athena Berbrick.
Welcome to the call.
Thank you. The next thing I should do is get onto the website.
That would probably be good. Do you have the exact URL?
Yeah, I was able to get it this morning.
Good, excellent.
www.
Why don't you go there now and just make sure that you can connect to the PowerPoint material that we'll be using.
What I did this morning was I did the www.nacsw.org audio conference 042511.
Yes.
Okay, that's where I'm to go, right?
Yes, and then when you get there, it will provide you links to, one link will be to the PowerPoint presentation, and one link will be to the post workshop questions for the CEUs.
I downloaded that already, so let me get onto this.
Okay, great.
Has anyone come on yet?
Just you and me.
Oh, my goodness, I'm number one. The last time I did this with another company, I had a lot of difficulty with it. So I said, let me go ahead and see if I can get in there now without a problem. So let's
well,
see what happens.
I'm glad it was nice and easy. Sorry, last time it was more difficult.
Oh, yeah, we started out on the road. Did you know that?
No.
We were going to attend, not your webinar, but we were going to attend the conference in South Jersey, I believe
yeah.
it was. Yeah.
Or Philadelphia, maybe?
Yeah, Philadelphia. The traffic was horrific. It was so bad, unbelievably bad, that by the time I was halfway there, I would never have made it on time. So we just decided.
How frustrating.
Yeah, it was. That it was for sure.
My family had a similar experience. We went down to Washington, D.C. on Good Friday to share the holiday with our niece and our daughter who are down south. And it's about a 5.5-hour trip, and we were still on the road about 11.5 hours later. It's that corridor is just really tough to get through.
Oh, that was awful. Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
For us, that was a record of sorts, an infamous record.
Yeah, well, we didn't expect that. We thought by that time, you know, the traffic would have dissipated and we would be able to get through easily, but we didn't. Okay,
yeah.
This is what I've done here. I'm trying to get onto the website. Let's see, www.scsw. Okay, it will get me. It says questions now. Am I possibly on the wrong site? Oh, here we go. Okay. The audio conference post-training questions. Yep, I have that.
So you're at www.nacsw.org/audioconf/. Hold on a second. Hello, welcome to the call.
Hi, this is Dave Mills.
Hey, Dave, yeah, how are you?
Good,
thank you.
Welcome to the call.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to hearing your discussion this afternoon.
Great, looking forward to it as well.
Okay, I'm trying to get onto your site now.
We've got nacsw.org/audioconf/042511-htm. HTM.
Yeah, I'm there. Okay. The page that I have is it says we do apologize. The link you have followed is invalid, no longer in service. Please choose an option below. Oh, what's that all about?
ACSW. I'm not sure. You didn't put a capital A for audio conference or a capital C.
That's all.
Because I'm at that page now, and I'm there with no difficulty.
That's what's happening here.
So let me.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the call.
Oh, thank you.
So it's all small letters. www.nacsw.org/A. Then small UDIO, capital C, small ONF, /042511, and then all lowercase HTM?
No, I have that all in. I have every bit of that in.
Huh.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Why don't you send me an email, and I'll send you a hot link, and maybe that will get us around this issue. If you just send me an email to Rick, R-I-C-K at NACSW.org. I will do my best to send you a hot link directly to the power material.
Okay. We'll do right now.
Okay.
Stay on the line. Is that right? We'll do that?
I am dialing.
Yes.
Put that phone down.
Dave, typically for our audio conferences at about 3 or 4 minutes after the hour, I'll do a very brief introduction that primarily gives folks some of the basic logistics, and then I'll hand the baton off to you. Will that work okay?
Sure.
Okay. You had no difficulty signing on?
Nope, no problem. Good.
Good. Do you do a lot of your...
I use the service myself quite a bit, so...
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you do a lot of your training with different distance learning venues?
Yeah, I try to use video whenever I can, but the truth is, you know, folks are not really that accustomed to video yet for training.
Yep.
But I've got one service where I can do 50 people at one time. It doesn't cost me anything, so...
Well, I like the handy video that you put together for
well,
promoting
a
this
quick
session.
Video anyway.
Allison.
Hello, welcome to our call. Glad you joined us.
Yes, this is Allison. Thank you.
Hi, Allison.
Hi, I'm sorry about the background noise. What do I need to do to get rid of it, see that you don't hear the background noise?
Well, when we start the session, I'll actually mute everybody, but in the meantime, if you hit *6, it will just mute your call, your phone individually.
Okay, *6? Okay.
Yes.
All right, yeah, because I'm outside right now, so there's a lot of noise.
Understood. Thank you for thinking of that.
Okay, thank you.
Where's this Rick, where's this conference call coming from?
Well, the speaker is, I believe, calling in from Virginia, and the NACSW office that's moderating is in Connecticut, and we've got callers from all different kinds of states, so it truly is pretty virtual.
That's awesome, because, you know, the area code that we called in, 213, that's an L.A., Los Angeles area code, so that's why I'm like,
right,
hello.
The conference call bridge originates from the West Coast. Yeah, it's quite an interesting arrangement.
Yeah. Hey, somebody say hello.
Yes, hello. This is Janice Marler.
Hi, Janice. Welcome. So glad you can join us.
Thank you.
I sent you a brief email there. Go ahead and send whatever we'll give you.
Got it. I just saw it come in.
That's what I came to see. I'm probably about to show all the students. I'm the president.
Hi, this is Victoria Bennett calling in.
Come on, and we would have a lot.
Welcome. So glad you're in on the call. We'll just have another couple minutes while we wait for some the rest of the callers to come in, and then we'll get started.
Thank you.
Great.
Hi, this is Wade Decker Schmidt. We probably have 6 or 8 case managers here for the training.
Great. The more the merrier. Glad you can join us.
Art Opperwall joining.
Hey, Art. Welcome from Michigan.
Thank you.
Jolene Snow from Oregon.
Ah, good. It's never good until we have the Northwest represented.
Or Southern California.
Or Southern California, of course. You know, we're going to have to go to every location of every person.
I know.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
We used to do weather reports on these conference calls and get weather updates from all the
Oh, that'd be interesting. It's sunny and warm here in Southern Cal.
I was going to say, but when we have someone from Southern California, we don't do the weather thing because it gets really...
we get jealous. It's jealous, right? But here in New Jersey, it's very sunny, and it's about 75 degrees.
Woo! It's warmer there than here in Southern California.
Very nice today, yeah.
At this moment in Oregon, it is sunny at this moment.
Nice.
It's torrential rain this morning. It will probably have torrential rain this afternoon. Right now, it's sunny.
We'll ask you in 10 minutes. It'll change.
Absolutely. That's Oregon.
This phone call sounds like a space shuttle.
It's a Mayo.
Okay.
We will, once the call starts, mute all the calls except for the speaker, except for when that person, when David opens up for question and answer. It'll make it much easier to track him. We'll probably have 40-plus callers, and there'll still be just too much background noise.
So, Rick, will you be on the call while I'm speaking?
Yes, and actually at any point that you want the lines open up for Q&A, just say, Rick, open up the line, so I'll be moderating and on the whole
call.
Your
voice will be present the whole time?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I did one of these calls once, and I talked for 5 minutes, not realizing that no one was there, because I had lost the call, so I don't want that to happen.
I've done that for even a little bit longer, so I was sure I was being amazingly insightful, and it just...
Well, God was listening.
I'll be back in 1 second. I have their caller coming in looking for direction, but I'll be right back.
Okay.
This is my first one of these, so this is interesting.
Mine too.
Mine too.
Mine too.
Can we take that as a positive or a negative? That nobody...
I've done it before. It's great.
Okay.
Is it, which one? Did you do one through NACSW or another? Okay.
Yeah. It was, actually it was on grant writing. I think it was about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Oh, good.
That was excellent. Oh, it was excellent.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm looking forward to this one, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually getting my MSW right now. We're doing program evaluation. So
right.
Really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I have my MSW. I just got mine about a year ago. And,
okay.
So I know what you're talking about with program evaluation.
Yeah. Did you get a job?
I do. I have two part-time jobs right now. One job I got through kind of a program I created for grandparents raising grandchildren.
Oh, awesome.
And we got a small grant, and so I'm working part-time there doing some case management stuff in addition to facilitating a support group and stuff like that for the folks. And then I have another part-time job that I got through a field instructor of mine. I interned with this organization before, and it's a strengthening families program. So
awesome.
Two part-time jobs.
Perfect. And what state are you in?
In New Jersey.
New Jersey. Wow, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We always love
it. It took me a while, though.
Well, I went to a social work job fair in about a week ago. There was at least 300 of us and about 20 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, like 3.
Right now. Oh. I'm getting if the light is on, the mic is live. Okay.
So, is there anybody from the Midwest? This is Crystal Brown in Minnesota.
Well, where do you live in Minnesota? I have family there.
Oh, I live in St. Louis Park, but I work in a northern suburb with the Salvation Army.
Oh, great. My family lives in Eden Prairie.
Oh, okay, sure.
My daughter works for Alina Hospital.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Ohio, we're here.
Good, welcome.
Hello, Ohio.
And actually, we're about to get started, so I just want to let you know that in a second, I'm going to mute everyone except our speaker and begin an introduction, and then we'll get started. So this is your fair warning. In 15 seconds, we're ready to start.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. Have fun, everyone.
NACSW, I'm delighted to welcome you to today's audio conference workshop entitled Strengthening Resources for Service in the Community of Faith Through Grant Writing and Program Development. Today's session will be led by David Mills, founder of Compassion by Design, an organization based in Virginia dedicated to helping churches become more missional through a variety of expressions of service. There's a growing awareness among many churches that service in the community is a vital part of the life of faith. Christians in social work are uniquely skilled to aid in effective development and sustainability as this movement toward community engagement continues. Today's workshop will present techniques Christians in social work can use to improve their grant writing and program development skills, with a special focus on programs that are suited to faith-based and community-based social services. Just before we begin our session today, let me quickly cover a few important housekeeping items. As I mentioned earlier, for parts of today's sessions, we'll be using a muting function, as we have on now, to eliminate any background noise that might compete with David's presentation. However, at a number of intervals, we'll disable the muting function and enter a live mode so that any of you can make comments or raise questions for discussion. During these times, if you have background noise and you need to mute out your own individual lines, please hit *6, and this will mute your particular line. Secondly, just a reminder that for today's call, we're going to be recording this session so that we can present this information to folks who can't participate but are interested in the material we'll be covering. And then thirdly, if at all possible, it will be helpful for you to be online following the PowerPoint presentation that David's developed. If for some reason you haven't been able to access this outline, please send me an email right away, rick@nacsw.org, and I'll send you a direct link to this PowerPoint presentation within the next few minutes. So without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speaker, David Mills. Take it away, Dave.
Rick, thanks so much. What a pleasure to be with all of you, and excited to share some ideas with you. And I think what I'd like to do to begin with is just share a little bit about my own personal journey and how I got kind of into the things I'm doing now with service. I do want to mention in the learning objectives in the PowerPoint, I mentioned the term Christian churches. And so just for frame of reference, that's intentionally a very broad term, at least in the way I'm using it. So that's not any kind of specific denominational reference. It's just a broad term. So we do want to talk about some of the ways that there is an increasing level of interest among those who are in church life, and I think that's very relevant as it comes to the need for and the role of program development and grant development, but particularly by those who have skills in the area of social work to help and help those things become more effective. On a personal level, I think it's important, you know, I like to share a little bit of my journey. I spent about 15 years pastoring in California and had the privilege of planting two new churches. After about 15 years of serving in pastoral ministry, I felt a real sense of leading to begin engaging more in the community. And part of that for me was a dissatisfaction with the way that I felt the church that I was serving in was engaging the community. And I wanted to be a person that was involved in making the gospel more relevant and available to people who were not in church. So I began developing programs. And in fact, I ended up sitting on one of the county welfare board management teams during welfare reform, if any of you remember that season. Particularly in California, that was a very tumultuous season, and I was one of the only people in the room who was not a social worker by trade or by education. I was the only guy with a REV before my name, and I had the very interesting experience of being pulled aside by every kind of social work management leader, from everything you can imagine, homelessness, foster care, mental health, welfare, rehabilitation, prisons. Every one of them would pull me aside at one time or another, and they kind of lower their voice, and they would say, so, Pastor Mills, you know, we've been trying to get churches involved, but we just can't seem to do that. And they would ask for some help in doing that, and I discovered that there was a huge opportunity for many of the resources that churches at least were perceived to have to be brought into the social work arena. The challenge was getting churches interested in that activity. And so many of you on the call may have had various experiences in trying to get people in the community of faith to engage in the community outside of traditional church activity. And we began doing that in California. We created a welfare to work program that was based on mentoring, had great success with it, won a lot of grants, and that experience then propelled me into the D.C. area where I've been serving for the last 8 years. And so my takeaway from that experience was a couple of important things. One is that there's a huge opportunity, as all of you know who are on the call today, for Christians who want to serve in the community. The second big takeaway was that something needed to change in the life of the church so that its attention would be more focused on those who are outside rather than those who are inside. And the third takeaway was, in many ways, the churches that I worked with were wholly unprepared to engage in a community sector that was essentially devoid of religious expression, and so there was lots of challenges in helping churches to learn how to engage. Just to make sure that I'm still on the call, Rick, I want to make sure that you're still there.
And I'm glued to every word.
Great. I like to talk, but not to myself, so I want to make sure that someone's listening. So those are some of my takeaways and in the early days of doing this about 13 years ago. But in the meantime, over the last, I'd say, 5 years or so, something has really changed in the community of faith. And there now today, in my opinion, is a growing movement throughout churches, at least in the United States, that is causing them to become much more interested in what they can do in the community. And that's become a very broad activity. I want to share just a little bit with you about what's happening, why that's happening, and where it's happening. And so my experience at this point is that more and more churches are now beginning to view finding ways to serve their community as an essential part of their ministry expression. And that has huge implications for people that are in social work. And by the way, Rick, I forgot to mention, I do not have an MSW, but I just want to ask a question of you. I have a master's degree in counseling, and I also have a master's degree in public administration. So does a master's in counseling plus a master's in public administration, does that equal an MSW?
In licensing terms, it wouldn't, but in colleagues in very similar types of work, definitely.
Great. Well, I just thought I'd give it a shot, you know. See if I get some extra credentialing there, but something has changed in the church, and so let's say I'm on page three in my notes, which would be slide number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What's driving this change? I think it's important to understand this. There is a growing awareness among U.S. churches that something is wrong. And part of that has been driven by some research. You may be familiar with David Olson's writing. He has written The American Church in Crisis. And another researcher you may be familiar with is George Barna. And in addition to these two gentlemen, there are other researchers who have all found the same basic thing. And they have discovered that, according to what the research projects, that within about 20 to 25 years, the American church will most likely lose about one half of its market share. And the decline slope is so steep in the American church that as we look out over the next 20 years or so, what we see is a culture that is much more like Western Europe than anything we see today here in America. Now, when I say this to pastors, I get lots of different reactions. But what's happening is across the United States, pastors, denominational leaders are all wrestling with the fact that the church in America is in decline and something is wrong. So there's a real stirring among pastors about what ministry means, about how they need to relate to the community. Secondly, I think there is a new embrace among churches about what it means to do the gospel. And so there was a huge split, as we know, many years ago, kind of between what people called the social gospel and the real gospel, depending on which side of that coin you were on. But there has been a real reemergence of people writing and thinking about the gospel in a different way. The most recent book, I'll think of the author's name in a minute, but his book is There's a Hole in Your Gospel. And so there's rethinking happening there. Additionally, there are more and more models now of churches that have found ways to engage their communities through service, whole varieties of different types of service, in every dimension of social work you can imagine. But that body of models is continuing to grow across the United States. So there are more and more points of reference as people think about what ministry is. And then I think the last factor, there's probably more, but the last one I'll touch on today, is that the emerging generation has a much stronger focus on the whole idea of cause. than we have seen in a long time. And so for much of the emerging generation, if an expression of faith does not have a strong cause element, then it is not viewed as being credible. And so churches are having to grapple with the fact that younger folks expect there to be some kind of meaningful service going on through the church. Any questions, Rick, that come to your mind?
Not at this point, but keep going.
Okay, great. So a couple of reference points for you as you think about this change, and I think this is important to understand how we plug in social work services related to program and grant development. Reference a couple of books by Alan Hirsch, The Shaping of Things to Come and Forgotten Ways. These are books that delve into some of this research and then talk to the church about how we have how we've forgotten some of our initial ways of doing ministry. And this focus is on the remissioning of the church, as well as missional forms of church that are much more conducive to a community-oriented type of ministry. Another point of reference would be the writing of Rick Roussel and Eric Swanson. Rick's out of Longmont, Colorado, and Rick has written a book called The Externally Focused Quest. Before that, the book prior to that was called Externally Focused Churches, and there are large numbers of churches that have paid attention to this idea, and what Rick basically has said is that it's time for churches to stop looking at the river and calling the water dirty, and it's time for them to simply wade in and begin to make a change. And so lots of churches are paying attention to that in a big way, large churches as well as small. And then there's another arena I'd like to touch on, and that's the area of church planting. If you're not aware, there's been a huge church planting movement in the United States for about the last 10 years, spanning across lots and lots of different denominational groups. And these church planters are changing the way the church is done. So I did a survey last year, asked a number of questions. One of the questions was, how many of these church pastors and new churches intended to integrate community service into their church? The way I asked it was, any new church that I'm involved in starting or supporting will include service to the community as a non-negotiable priority. And if you look at the graph here in the PowerPoint, you can see that with a 92% response, that this idea of community service in new churches is a non-negotiable rather than something that might be an add-on or a possibility for them. So huge changes in the way that the church is viewing social work. And that means a number of really important things for people that care about the way that lives are restored and renewed in the area of social work. So I'd like to take a minute, and Rick, just open the line for questions, comments about what I've presented so far.
We've got a chunk of everything. And to me, it's like churches
are
all we
should
do is
start a
daycare.
How do I speak to
my
son? As you can tell, the lines are open.
So anybody have any questions or any comments? Does this make sense to you?
Yes. Yes, I've seen it happen.
Anybody seen this phenomenon happen around you?
My church, actually. And my son is a pastor in Minnesota, and their church is very much involved in bringing the gospel to the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and so they've been doing quite a bit of community. They're active in the community. So I've seen this trend occurring more and more.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else have a perspective, any feedback on kind of what I've shared?
Yeah, I'd like to share something. This is Rebecca. I'm in Southern California. And the church that I go to is very focused on creating a beautiful building. And the money goes, I mean, they do the community outreach, but if they don't have money for the building, they don't do the community outreach. So that just kind of discourages me.
Right. So, Rebecca, what you see now is you see that what you, the attitude that you just expressed, the concern that you shared, that same attitude now is being expressed by lots of people in the public space, and they want to see whether churches are credible by whether or not they serve others. So there's a lot of changes happening in that. Anybody else have a comment or some feedback?
You were looking for the next source.
Yeah, my name is Titi Moyo. I'm a reverend of the United Methodist Church, and I'm pastoring a church now. I've been pastoring for 16 years, and I'm also a social worker. And what you are talking about, you know, I do agree with you. That's what churches are moving toward. But the challenge is the community most of the time is suspicious, you know, especially as a pastor when you want to get involved. Most of them, they think you want to evangelize them.
Right. That's a great comment, and I'll touch on that once we close the lines. That's a great comment. Let's get one more comment or question, and then we'll close the lines again.
When we have the lines open, just a reminder, if you have background, whether it's you know, running water or barking dogs or children, if you hit *6, it will mute out your phone so that the other folks can hear what's going on in the call. So, again, just to remember, remind with the 40 or 50 folks that we have here, hit *6 so that you can mute your own phone so during these live sessions we can hear all the speakers. Thanks.
Okay, this is in New Jersey.
I could appoint a secretary right now.
Hello?
Yes, can you, we can hear you.
This is in New Jersey.
I thought
the same thing.
Yes.
The other one.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yes, we hear you. The church that I attend now is a church that has expanded its facilities in three areas of New Jersey to help the poor. They have actually taken counties and they have rented community park and opened it up to the poorest in the community. They have gotten the names of people who are in that category. These past 3 years, they have had runs, K-runs for water. They have had clothing for the poor. They have had toys for the children.
The ideological boundary of the community, I guess,
rapidly. Thanks for sharing that. Why don't you go ahead and close the line, Rick?
Line is very, very, I'm not able to hear.
Okay, we're going to close the lines again. We'll get that quieted down. And Rick, are you still there?
I am, David, so I've just did the line, so it's just you.
Okay, so great comments. So, and I love I love both the questions as well as the great stories. And so there are churches around the country who have now decided that serving the poor, reaching people that are hurting around them, that are traditionally outside of their church membership, is now part of their mission. And that's a very, very significant movement. One of the reasons that churches need to do this, just as you're selling this and helping people to understand it, there is a great need for us to deconstruct in our culture some of the negative paradigms about what church is, and one of the ways that can happen is through these acts of compassionate service. And it's one of the ways that we convince people that we're not just there to hit them with the Bible, but instead we're there to really help them in a practical way. And that's a significant part of this, and I think it's important, but here's the reality. And this is becoming more and more the norm. And of course, there's always variations of adoption, and there are early adopters and those who come later. But more and more churches realize this, but it moves them into a new world called social work, called community service, called public service. And many, many churches have never been there before. Even in their entire denominational history may have never been there, or in any history that they can remember. So it leads them in a place where they are trying to do things that they may have no built-in skills to do. And they may have needs for professional partners to help them down the road. So I want to talk about that a little bit. It's very common for churches to develop community service in the same way that they develop church programming, and that is kind of inspiration followed by experiment. And so we have lots of social programs run by churches that are not based upon best practices, they're not based upon a thoughtful program model, they're not based upon any kind of theory of change, they're simply based upon whatever inspirational thing drew that church into that service thing. Now, we should be careful not to disparage the value of that inspiration, because that's what got them to move. And so that is very important, but the challenge comes in when programs develop, they have not had any of the benefit of any kind of serious programmatic development. And that creates all kinds of challenges, but it is very, very common. And, you know, part of the lifestyle of most churches is that they have the belief that they can do whatever they put their mind to do. And so there is this do-it-yourself kind of attitude that tends to creep into church life. And while that's a very good thing in many ways, it creates challenges when we put ourselves into situations where we don't have the skills that are requisite to achieve some of the goals we're trying to accomplish. So we have to be aware of the huge paradigm shift that has to occur in the lives of people who are now taking on the community as parish, the lives of the poor in a new way, and it requires a whole set of new skills. So what's the opportunity? Well, the opportunity is lots of new places where social work programs can be expressed. The other opportunity that goes with this is large potential for support for social work-oriented programs. And then I think the other potential here, if social workers who are trained to be effective in developing programming and supporting it, if those social workers can't join these churches, I think the quality of that service can be much, much higher and the impact can be much greater than it would be otherwise. So the question then, I think, is there a net gain here for the mission or for the kingdom? And I think the answer is yes. I think there is a net gain potentially here for the broader mission that we all serve. So here's some specific needs that I think we should pay attention to. And these are the kind of things that you're aware of as a social worker as kind of the normative way that you do business. The first one is program planning. Thoughtfully developing programs in such a way that they have measurable goals and objectives. They are delivered in a way that's based upon best practices. And I think that it's critical that we begin thinking about how we could bring those skills to bear in a church service setting. I think the other area is this whole idea of understanding how to identify best practices. And we all know that in many, many areas of social work, there are limited sets of best practices. There are certainly promising practices. There are things that have been shown to have value. And so it's not as easy for most of us of going to the online encyclopedia and putting in best practice for the homeless, best practice for education after school, because in all of these fields there are a huge variety of things that are in different stages of qualification as being best practice. And so that's why your skill is so important, to identify those best practices that are the best fit for the cultural setting in which a church might serve, and then helping the church to figure out how do they integrate a best practice into their activity. I discovered that many churches, one of my pastor friends, he says it this way. He says we dumb our way into, and then he'll fill in the blank. And so they dumb their way into a program, and what that means, I think, is they experiment and pray their way into serving the best way they know how. Well, in many cases, that process of experimentation gets people into doing very, very high-impact things. And sometimes it's simply a question of putting the right label, the best practice label, on that activity and maybe making some adjustments. In other cases, we have churches that are offering programs that are not well-conceived, and they have some significant programmatic issues that are built into the very structure, and that more significant help is needed. Another specific area of need is the area of collaboration. And for those who are in professional social work, you know, we take collaboration for granted. We work very hard at collaboration. We recognize that collaboration is an essential part of successful service. But that, for many churches, is a brand new ballgame. And so it's very significant when we help churches to understand the context of service in which they serve and begin to look for intentionally collaborative partners that they can work with and develop long-term relationships with. And then the last one, which we're going to spend some more time on today, is this idea of funding. Many of the missions that churches are engaging in are now taking them well beyond the resources that are in the offering plate and well beyond the missions budget. That does not mean the resources can't be developed, but they aren't there in the existing budget, especially over the last couple of years with economic downturn hitting church budgets
across the U.S., there's a real perception of concern about things that cost extra money, and many of these service activities clearly take people way outside of that capacity. So help is needed there. Let's just take a minute, Rick, and just see if there's any questions or comments.
Okay. What happened?
Okay, lines are open, Dave.
Great. Anybody have a question or comment?
So far, so good.
It seems to me like the word collaboration is very important. In my experiences with my church is that it's so set up, you know, kind of structurally, like things get done because, you know, this person is in charge of this or whatever. And so sometimes coming from my social work it feels funny, like, oh, we don't get to collaborate on this. This is just how it's done.
Right.
And so I think there's a cultural difference sometimes between my social work and then my church.
And that's a huge difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Many churches are they're insulated in their programming and their leadership. And so the idea of working intentionally with a group that's not have the same mindset is a huge challenge.
And I think many churches are skeptical when they hear the word social work and programs, and they need a better understanding, I think, of how the two are very, they dovetail really one another.
There's implementation and coordination.
Definitely.
One more comment or question, and we'll close the lines again. Okay, Rick, maybe you should go ahead and close the line. So as we begin thinking about, and I think if you look around, you'll see lots of churches doing this. I've outlined some of the needs, program planning, best practices, identification and matching, collaboration and funding support. You'll see lots of places where these things need to be plugged in. And part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to help churches discover that there are effective things they can do that go beyond kind of a single big day event, which for many churches is their current default. That's how they get social work done in their minds. They do one big day event. Well, we know that the big day, a big service day, a big event opens the door for relationships and opportunities for service, but it probably doesn't get much of that service done. So it's important to help churches to move beyond that. Let me be very specific and talk about one process that we have been using for the last 4 or 5 years to help churches with this process, something that would be very familiar to most of you. And Rick, let me just check and make sure that the phone line is still live.
Still live. Still working.
Okay, good. So one of the ways that we have discovered that churches need help is they need help understanding the needs in their community. And I first discovered this. I was working with a very large Midwestern church, and they were in the process of trying to set up a really high-quality after-school program. They had good curriculum. They had qualified instruction. They were doing space remodeling. They were looking at licensure to make sure that health codes were being met. And they were developing this wonderful program. Well, one day, this is a large church in a well-known Midwestern city. They opened their front door, and they looked across the street, and they noticed that there was a boys and girls club across the street. And no consideration at all had gone into whether or not there was a need for an after-school program or how it might interact with the boys and girls club across the street. And much of that would have been uncovered if they had done anything that was looked like a traditional needs assessment process. So essentially what we have done is we've kind of reached into the social work toolbox and taken the traditional skills of needs assessment, and we've converted them into a voluntary process so that churches are able to get involved and get their members involved in completing a needs assessment in their community as a precursor to service activity. So needs assessment precedes service activity, right? That's the way it's done. And so we've helped churches to find a way that they can do that, and they do that without having to hire a significant
needs assessment consultant, evaluation consultant, and they do this with volunteers. The benefits for the church is it teaches the volunteers some skills of intentional listening. It teaches them how to begin exploring partnerships. And as they talk about needs in the community, lots of partnership opportunities arise, which is very healthy. They also learn about who are the players in the community, who are the people who are already providing services. And so we built in an asset mapping process into the needs assessment so they understand who's already providing services and what they do. And then, of course, for new churches, this whole process of needs assessment expands their relationships in a very dramatic way, has the same impact on churches that are restarting. It gives them ability to talk to lots of new people they've never met before. And so we have two versions of this needs assessment. We've used it now with hundreds of churches. And one of them is a five-step assessment. We call that a rapid community assessment. And then we have a full eight-step process for needs assessment as well. And they really are designed so that volunteers can use them. And there's lots of opportunity here for social worker guidance, involvement, leadership, and helping to understand how to frame questions, how to interpret results, and how to make connections in the community. And so I've pictured both books here. You're welcome to take a look at those at CompassionByDesign.org. And we have found that that process has been one of the healthy first steps that we've helped lots of churches to take before they engage in substantial new service endeavors to help them figure out where to focus and how to focus. One of the outcomes of that, you can see pictured here below the picture of these two workbooks. And we call this a strategic match. And what happens with a church is that they are able to identify for themselves some important overlapping lenses. One is, what are they passionate about? And it's important that folks that are going to begin doing social work on a voluntary basis, they begin to identify their own sense of calling and passion as the basis for specific kinds of service that they might engage in. The next one we want them to answer is, what's the most significant thing we could do? And for the large church that was across the street from Boys and Girls Club, my hunch is it was not to do another after-school program. I think there were other needs that they probably could have addressed that would have been more significant. And then the last piece was, what resources and assets can they bring to this? What do they have to offer to develop a service program from? And so that has been one of our very, I think, very significant approaches that's worked really well. We've taken kind of the mythology out of what needs assessment is and put it into the hands of volunteers. And so we think it's been very effective. I'd love to hear, Rick, if anyone else is using needs assessment as part of their process of helping in the community, and how they think this might apply. Okay. And I can't interpret the dog language, but it sounded like I'm not sure what that meant, actually.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that you could hear me.
It's okay. But it's healthy, it's your dog.
Okay, no, it's not my dog, but I'll start a sick start. Sorry.
Anybody using needs assessment currently?
I'm Jane Ferguson. Jane Ferguson at Montgomery, Alabama. Yes. We have had a community ministries program for 23 years. I have used the needs assessment to design every program we have.
Oh.
Couldn't function without it.
How has it helped you, Jane? How has it helped you?
Well, I think the church is notorious for deciding what people need, and we want to give it to them whether they need it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So when we take time to do our homework, then we can pinpoint a need in the community with the resources that we have to help meet that need, and that makes for a tremendously good marriage.
Mm-hmm. Great. And how do you find that churches receive that idea?
Fantastic.
Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else have any experience with trying these assessments as kind of an introductory activity for getting churches engaged?
I knew that, so that's not what I do and what I've been.
This is Crystal from Minnesota, and I wasn't part of the needs assessment, but I was able to be a consultant with a a large church in Richfield, Minnesota, and it was actually a pilot program with the largest county, Hennepin County in Minnesota, the Church of New Life, and then also a local health organization to come up with a pilot program for teen pregnancy prevention. And actually what ended up happening in terms of collaboration and needs is that we found we ended up serving kids and adults from the ages of about 9 to 79 in the community, and it just worked really well and figured out the need for culturally specific programming within the Black church.
That's great. And so I think one of the interesting opportunities here is that if we take this from the other side, if you are a part of a smaller agency, a smaller county government, a city government, you may not have the money to pay for a traditional needs assessment. You may have some money, but, you know, needs assessment prices have gone up pretty significantly. So if you were to use a voluntary approach to doing needs assessment, there's two wins here for you. One is you're able to provide the needs assessment that's needed by the community. But the other win is, here's a way for you to engage lots of new volunteers into exploring what the needs are in the community. And that creates a long-term resource as well. Anybody else using needs assessment as part of their process? Okay. So here's one of the things that happens to a volunteer who goes out and does needs assessment work. They will sit in either an interview or a survey setting, and they will have a conversation with someone who knows maybe personally about the needs that they're experiencing. That is a very dramatic experience for a volunteer to hear about the needs in the community. I remember talking to one pastor after he sat down with the principal of a local elementary school. And the pastor was visibly shaken by the level of need that that principal had expressed. And the pastor would have never had that conversation if there hadn't been a needs assessment going on. So I think as an engagement tool and as a planning tool, we should not look past this. We should really think about how we can use it effectively. And let's go ahead, Rick, and mute the lines again. Anybody still there?
Okay, David, they're muted.
Great. Made me nervous there for a second.
Sorry about that. Slow
response. It's no problem. So let's transition now. So the idea of program planning is very significant. Needs assessment is one significant part of the program planning process. Really, social workers are best positioned to do program design, which I'm not going to talk about today, but a lot of that falls out of needs assessment. And it really requires the unique skills of someone who understands how to assemble program elements so they address needs and still retain their sense of vitality and connection to the faith community. So that's a significant opportunity. So let's talk a little bit about funding. This has been probably my personal primary activity for about the last 10 years or so. And it's very significant, you know, that we think about how we develop funding for our programs. And I'm sure all of you have, if we were to go through everyone on the call, we probably could all tell a story about issues we're facing with funding, challenges, the kind of demand it places on us. And that's just part of the deal. But what's happened is many of these churches have now joined that story. And we want to help them to participate. Number one, we want them to collaborate and not duplicate services, because we don't want to create additional funding gaps for services that are already existing. But secondly, we're going to find that churches are now wading into things for which they don't have as much money as they might like. And so helping them with funding is part of the process. And if we approach this collaboratively, we can be very successful. It's also important that we help them line up their sense of calling and passion with their service, because if we don't do that, they won't stick with it very long. And I've already mentioned this challenge of people doing program planning without any kind of guidance, so I'm going to skip that slide. And I'm going to actually go to I'm sorry, I don't have, I've got slide number, page 12, so that's probably about slide 24 for you. We understand that well-planned services also need well-planned funding. And so that's not always the norm in the faith community. We sometimes get our services out ahead of our funding thinking. And I've had lots of discussions with very well-meaning, even megachurch leaders, about the services that they plan to offer. When I begin talking about how they're going to pay for it, there is no clue many times. And so it's really important to have these discussions early in the process with people, help them to think about how they're going to pay for it. And it's important that whatever the service model is, a resource engine or engines, plural, is attached to that service model, and that has to be done in advance. One of the things that comes up for many of these churches is that their religious nonprofit structure is not going to be appropriate for their community service activity. So we spend quite a bit of time helping them to think through, do they want to run services under their church nonprofit? Do they want to create a new nonprofit? Is there another nonprofit in the community that they can simply partner with? So we have a lot of those conversations with churches. It's a very common question. And the answer is, if they're going to offer services that are really outside the scope of their church activity, many of them are going to want to form some other structure, at the very least some kind of an LLC structure for risk mitigation and liability protection, and so others will want to form a nonprofit. But it's important that we help them through the planning process so they don't jump to the structure before they've thought through the reason for the structure. Because as we know on the call, just because you have a nonprofit does not mean you're going to have money in it. And so for many churches, they might even form a nonprofit, but they'll still have no money in it. And so that's not enough. But it is part of the process of this conversation. And the rule that we have experienced in many cases is that if churches have a religious corporation nonprofit already, then that is what we call one funding bucket. That's one place that money can go into. And a lot of money can go in that bucket. A lot of money that's not currently going there can go in that bucket, and we should help with that. But if we create a secular structure, a nonprofit, then that's another bucket that money can go into. But the church has to be really willing to work on that. The rule, of course, in funding is that we want to have diversified funding streams, not just one, but multiple ways to build resources. Yeah, for churches, though, they're used to living off usually a single funding stream, and that is typically offerings. So this is new thinking for them. Now, the obvious issue here is that, as we all know, funding in the nonprofit sector is competitive. And I recently applied for a federal grant, and of the 68 grants that came in, 13 were funded. And for many grant applications, it's much worse odds than that. And so it's very competitive. I remember interviewing a large community action agency on the West Coast and talking with the executive director. This action agency had 5 full-time grant writers on their staff. And you can imagine the amount of grant activity that was coming out of that staff of 5 full-time grant writers. Well, in the same year, I interviewed one of the largest, and I won't say which, but one of the largest organizations in the United States that does international service. And they, for their domestic activity, they didn't have even one full-time grant writer. They had a $10,000 annual budget for that same activity that action agency had 5 grant writers for. So very competitive. And because we haven't thought through the need for funding, we haven't thought through the need to staff and resource funding. So from a Christ-centered perspective, what are the advantages that we have? Well, first of all, we are mission-centered. So we have people and volunteers that will do things based upon mission, that don't have to be paid, don't need to be paid, and they will serve in very dramatic ways. I just got back from International Care Ministries in the Philippines, and the level of sacrificial work in that mission field is amazing. the amount of work you're getting done. So mission is a big thing we should not discount. Secondly, from a Christian perspective, Christian organizations really are attached to the largest funding base in the United States by far. The largest percentage of volunteers, the largest percentage of donations come from people of faith. And so we're actually in a very good spot to build funding from that perspective. The primary disadvantage that I see among church and Christian groups is a lack of infrastructure and planning for the development of their funding activity, and then also a ton of segmentation and silos in which each group tries to do their own thing and does not learn to cooperate and leverage against others. And so one of the ways that we have found to help groups that are working to build funding as we begin to help them think about how are you going to pay for the services you want to offer is that we have taught them to use a team-based approach to grant funding. And that team approach allows them to go out into their membership and find people that maybe have graduate education, maybe have grant writing experience, maybe have business or technical writing experience, have accounting experience, and to assemble a team to help them develop grants. And so for the mid-size to smaller organization, and even for some large ministry or Christian service organizations, the only way they're going to get effective in the grant world is to assemble a team of people to do that work. So let me talk about that in a little more detail. The rule is, of course, that it doesn't work that you submit one grant and win one grant, right? Rick, any idea what the ratio is of grants submitted to ones that are won? Any idea what the ratio is of grants that are submitted versus those that are won or awarded?
Within the nonprofit world,
yeah,
maybe 10 to 15%.
Okay, 15%. So less, you know, between 1 in 7 and 1 in 10, somewhere in there. Yeah, so I think that's
guess.
That's a good estimate. All right. And so for many of the folks that we want to help with grants, they think that if they submit one grant, they'll win one grant. But the reality is, if they want to win one grant, they have to plan on submitting 10 grants. And so the idea that they're going to hire a consultant to write 10 grants for them, for many of these groups, especially mid-size or smaller, that is financially prohibitive unless the consultant is very inexpensive. And so somehow we have to leverage that number up. And so a team approach is one of the best ways to leverage that resource for grant writing into a larger capacity. One good example of this is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Capital Area Christian Church. They used a team approach. The team consisted of a staff member from the church who was working part-time on this project, a volunteer or two from the church, and they had a couple of social workers from the community join the team. And that church brought in about $800,000 over the course of 1 year to install an accessible, handicap accessible playground that's being used by the community now. So one example, and a very simple team approach that allowed them to be quite effective at seeking grants, because it's about the quality of that grant, it's also about how many you apply for. In a team approach, there is lots of room for professionals to join that team. And what I tell churches is, assemble a team and then hire a professional. That professional's efforts will be much more effective and leveraged in a dramatic way when you get a team around them. And because my experience has been, when I am writing a grant for a Christian ministry group or a service group, I drive a lot of work for that group because I'm asking about things they've never developed before. I ask for their organizational chart. I ask for their program model. I ask for letters of support. I ask for lots of things to make the grant more effective. And if a team is in place, even if they hire a professional, that will be a much more effective process. So anybody here, let's open the call briefly. Is there anybody currently on the call who's using a team approach for fundraising or for grant writing? I'd love to hear about that. I think we'll need to open the call for that.
David, I know this is different than the example you're looking for, but I teach a course at a small Christian college, and we use a team grant rights model. Exactly the research we're talking about, because of all the research and legwork that has to be done, having a number of people to be able to distribute that workload makes it a much more efficient and effective process.
Right. That's great. That's great learning. That's a great learning model. Anybody else using a team approach? Okay, so my suggestion to you is that if you are interested in helping Christian groups with grants, that you approach them about developing a team. Now, we use the book that's pictured here in the PowerPoint called Grant Teams That Win. That book has a CD that goes with it. It's got job descriptions in it. It's got scheduling forms. It's got ideas about how to develop a process. And we may want to close the call now, because we have a stereo playing there, I think. And so if you're going to use a team approach, here are some of the significant things that you want to pay attention to. Make sure that the roles are well-defined. Make sure that there is a rhythm of activity that goes on in that team so that everyone is moving together to begin working on identifying grants and then working together to get them written and submitted on time. I think that one of the most important things in that team setting is a sense of accountability. And what will happen is we divide up the work, and then somebody gets busy. And even though their part of that grant is very significant, it's not done on time, and we all know what happens then. And so accountability and communication is a significant part of that process. We generally do not form a team in a church or ministry group unless they have a leader who's willing to coordinate the activity of that team and keep it moving. Because essentially, this is all volunteer work that's on top of everyone's regular schedule. So you will discover, though, that there are lots of volunteers out there who have the training, they have the experience, they may even have specific grant writing skills that can join a team like this. We've also discovered that it's very significant, especially with a team of church-related volunteers working on grants, that they stay very strongly connected to the ministry values of that church, because the reason they're helping with grants is because they care about the service that's going on. So if it's a service to children, then it's significant that the children's activity leaders come in and spend time with those grant writers, because otherwise the mission passion tends to seep out of this work, and then it becomes this much more laborious task. But if we inject mission into the grant writing activity, it becomes a lot more fun. So I think that's a very significant part of this process. It's also important that we look for a variety of different skill sets that can make up this kind of team. And the team, depending on what kind of grants it will seek, is going to need a number of skill sets. Let me suggest several of them to you. I've already mentioned this idea of a team leader and someone to manage communication. The obvious skill set, of course, is someone to do writing, writing is always better in a team than it is individually for a lot of reasons, but beyond that, someone has got to do the evaluation. And so what we've done is that we've often used professionals to write up the evaluation portion of the grant, and then if the grant is funded, that professional gets a contract out of that opportunity, and that's been very effective. We also make sure that we are paying attention to the business interests of that organization, and so we will include a business member on that team who pays attention to costs, expenses, workloads, as well as budgets, and that's very significant. So a grant team approach is one of the best ways, I think, to leverage forward the work, and I think it's a much more realistic way to engage a organization that's working on community service especially if they can't afford a full-time consultant to do it. And it also leverages up the number of grants that are able to be submitted. So I think that's a significant opportunity. I think, Rick, at this point, we can take whatever other questions people have, and that's the material that we plan. Anybody have questions or comments? I just wanted to mention my enthusiasm primarily because there's so many different tasks that everyone can find a niche that really fits their interest or their skill set, and so whether it's drudgery, most people end up working on that niche that really appeals to them or they're really good at and allows everyone to feel like they have value added to the overall process. So I've also experienced the team process is a wonderful way to design a grant that gets lots of buy-in and that gets people continue to be involved after the program actually gets funded. You know, I think, Rick, also it allows people that have less experience to participate without this huge sense of risk. So it's much safer for a person who's learning how to do grant writing to do it that way than to be stuck kind of in the role of getting it done themselves for the first time. So good apprenticeship or learning process there as well.
Great point. And since it usually involves much more than just one grant process, developmental helping folks who are new to become proficient so that they're then more equipped as the ongoing grant writing goes on.
And typically, Rick, I've also seen the fact that for many churches, this is something that people can do who are part of that church who never thought that their skills might fit into a service setting because they may have skills that don't apply to some of the traditional service activities in the church. And so this allows them to do something that's very significant and meaningful for them, and it helps in a big way. And, of course, when a grant team wins a grant, it's a really wonderful experience because they have now contributed to that ministry or that service setting in a very significant way. So they have joined that service by finding resources. And I think the other piece that's important is that the alternative to a team approach is that we go find all the social workers who are program managers and we lock them in their basement all night, every night for a week, so they can try and get the grant done. You know, that's what we usually do. And it's kind of a painful deal, to be honest, you know. So when I first started doing this, I was introduced into social work activity by a wonderful homeless health nurse. And every year, she would go lock herself in a room for 2 weeks so she could write her HUD grant. And she did not enjoy it, you know. So I think that there's an opportunity here to change the way we do business if we can think about this as a funding team activity rather than just the labor of a few unfortunate people.
Well said.
Anybody else have experiences with team approach, other questions? Well, Rick, this has been good. I hope it's been helpful for the folks on the call. And I've appreciated the opportunity to share some of the things I've learned.
David, you still back? David, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just saying that I appreciate having done the call today. I hope it's been helpful for the folks that were on it. And happy to answer the questions. If not, I guess we can wrap it up.
Great. What I'll do then is I'll just do a quick wrap-up, give people some logistics so they can pick up their CEUs
And then we'll just end the call with the mic open, so if anyone has any last-minute comments or questions, they can funnel them to you. Let me all of you that were participating in today's session, and most of all, David, for today's excellent presentation of a number of skills. One of the key pieces of NACSW's mission is to equip Christians in social work to be effective bridges between the social services and the faith community, and this just seems like an excellent example of the ways in which we can draw on our faith and our connection with faith communities and our expertise and our experience in social services and bring them together so that hopefully both can do their work more effectively for the good of the people that we serve. So this is just in a paradigmatic way really at the heart of NACSW's interest, and we hope our ability to draw on the capacity of our members to help in this way. For all of you who participated today, we would greatly appreciate receiving your evaluation of today's audio conference. In a few minutes, I'll send out an email with a link to an evaluation survey. It only takes about 5 minutes to fill out, and it will help us get a sense of how useful this was and how we can tie into topics in the future for other audio conferences that will be helpful to you. Secondly, for those of you who are interested in obtaining documentation of continuing education contact hours, a reminder to download the 10 post-training questions that were posted on our website. Again, if you're having difficulties, send me an email at rick@nacsw.org. And to fill out these questions and send them in so that we can provide you with documentation of 1.25 CEUs earned for today's session. And then lastly, I'd love to invite you to consider signing up for our next audio conference workshop scheduled for September 26th at the same 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. The topic in September is going to be Christian Spiritual Approaches to Motivational Interviewing, and will be led by Kenneth Smith, a psychotherapist with Christian Life Enrichment Counseling in Sanford, North Carolina. So again, thank you very much for joining us today. I'll open up the line, so if you have any last questions or comments, you can share them. But for those of you who need to move on to other busy activities in your schedule, again, thank you, and hope you join us again in the future. Okay, any last comments? The lines are open.
Thank you, David.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much.
David, I'd like to say that if you can funnel to me information about some of the future trainings that you're doing in other venues, I'd like to make them available to NACSW members, because I think that we have a lot within our membership who want to be more supportive of the churches and faith communities that we're a part of. And having some of the tools that you provide and the training that you produce, I think would be a real important support for them.
Happy to do that.
David, have you done some work developing groups of folks who assist churches somewhat like the model that you do for churches? Obviously, you
I actually saw my list to mention that. I probably should have earlier, but one of the challenges I have is simply my personal capacity, and so especially during the federal grant writing season, I'll get more requests than I can respond to. And I think there also are churches and service organizations that are centered around the country that are looking for help. And so I think there's lots of opportunity for people that are in social work if they want to participate in either, real frequent grant writing or occasional grant writing to get opportunities for that. Because it really is a significant need. And I generally introduce this team approach because I don't want people to think that many of these groups don't have the money to hire a full-time professional, but they will hire a person on contract. And the team approach allows that contract to be more frequent, I think, and more effective.
But I think there's a huge need for that, for social work trained professionals that want to help people through. And it gives them also the process to actually sit down with people and talk about this whole program planning process, rather than, hey, I want a grant, can you help me? Sure, right. But let's talk about what you got, you know,
right.
And what you're trying to develop. Because typically the money piece of this drives a lot of interest, but the reality is it's the setup that wins the grant more than it is the grant writing. And the social workers are uniquely positioned to have those conversations about what is really effective quality programming look like, how do you develop it, how do you measure it. All of those conversations are the kind of things that I think that social workers can bring that really change the quality of the service that churches are offering.
Right. And I think one of the advantages for if you're a social worker of faith, churches have a higher level of comfortability because there's a shared language, there's a shared understanding, there's a shared level of support. So at least some of the churches that I've worked with, once they know that you're a person of faith, the partnership seems much more natural to them rather than
In fact, for many of them, to be honest, it's a requirement.
Right.
And they may not say that, but in their, as you said, they're in their trust, you know, if that level of rapport is not established, then there's just not going to be enough trust to get things done.
Right, right. And just the idea of speaking the same language. So many times I've worked with social services and churches, and it's so difficult for each to understand what the other is saying because of the jargon
right.
that comes in each of the different communities. And so having
right.
folks a familiarity with both the jargon from both communities
right.
has a real
and so you become an interpreter. I mean, when I first started doing this, I would sit in these welfare management committee meetings, and they would use all these initials and three-letter acronyms. I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
It took me about 6 months to figure out what they were talking about, until I got the courage to ask, you know.
Right.
And so you're exactly right. There's this role of interpreter between the two groups.
Right, and similarly in our faith communities, we use a lot of terminology that just won't mean a whole lot outside of that faith community.
That's exactly right, yeah. And of course, in the grant world, you know, if you can't do, you can't make that shift, then you can't write the grant.
Right.
And so there's a lot of art to taking the life service that's rooted in faith, and then expressing that in a social service language.
Right. Definite more art than science.
That's true.
Well, we're at the 2:15 mark. Last time for anyone who has a comment or question. Otherwise, we're going to adjourn.
I have a question. This is Rebecca in Southern California. David, is there a place on your website, because I haven't looked at it yet, where there's an example of a grant that you've written?
I don't ever post them. And the reason for that is that what people do is they will take them and try and use them. And what happens is they think that a boilerplate approach will help them, and it won't. Because most grants, if you use boilerplate, you know, they won't ever be submitted. So I don't ever post grants for that reason, because people that don't know what they're doing will just, they'll take them and misuse them. So, but what we do within our own team is that we'll share that. We build up a grant library,
uh-huh.
and we share that library with each other so that if we're writing a grant for a hunger or a child's need issue, then we can pull up another grant that either we or one of our team members has already written.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of opportunity to kind of share language between people who are doing that
right.
to help. So if you have a particular grant you're interested in, you'd be welcome to email me. I'd see if I have some I can send to you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So are you going to school?
I think what you said about the setup is really important about this, how we set it up.
Right.
Because of the competition level. I think the setup is key.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we are officially adjourned. Again, Dave, thank you so much for sharing with
you.
And we look forward to keeping this conversation going.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Have
Rick.
A wonderful day.
Take care, everybody. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for NECSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to ethically integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NECSW activities and events, such as NECSW's upcoming convention 2011 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from October 20th to 23rd, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NECSW members, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the member section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NECSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NECSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening into our podcast session today.